Once again, it's time to scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roel Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Today our guest is Barbara Arlen Fay, editor of the Davenport Catholic Messenger. After our conversation, Garrison Keeler will bring us the Writer's Almanac on Scribble. Barb, it is good to see you again and ask how things are going.
Well, thanks. I appreciate being back.
Oh, yeah. I should explain that Barb was my guest on Saturday Morning Live not too many weeks, months ago, however long it was. But you're here tonight to be grilled about your role as editor of the Davenport Catholic Messenger.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's a...
My first question would be, do you get a lot of grilling? We get the Lutheran, and that editor is grilled every single week, believe me.
Oh, we get grilled.
Do
we get grilled. Yeah. You know, you're darned if you do and darned if you don't kind of thing.
And political
even worse
if you
worse.
Do nothing, right?
Right.
Oh, yeah.
That's right.
It's funny how religion has become so political.
Yeah.
It is, and that's the one thing we talk about, separation of church and state. Oh boy, they're rushing right toward one another these days. And I don't know. It's not my kind of country in that respect, for sure.
Right.
But what's it like to go from being a reporter to an editor?
Well, I get to make more decisions. It's interesting because you end up making the decisions. You're the one who finally has to decide, okay, what content are we going to run? And I realize it's a great thing. It's like, you know, I feel like every week I've got this baby we give birth to, and we have figured out everything that's going to go into that paper, but I'm the one who ultimately makes a decision on what stories are going to be in the paper and whether a column gets in or not. I judge the stories based on their merits and whether I think they'll be of interest to the readers, that sort of thing. I mean, I have a staff to assist, but I'm ultimately the person who makes the final decision on, you know, especially the editorial page. I want to make sure that I've looked at every letter to the editor, that I've examined every opinion piece that's going to go in the paper to make sure it's not going to come back to haunt me.
Well, now, what's the difference between working for a religious paper or one that's run by the Diocese of Davenport and one that's run for pecuniary gain?
There's a fine line you walk working for a church publication. The bishop is my publisher, So he doesn't examine everything we write. But I do occasionally, if I've got a column that I think might give him a headache, I would certainly contact him and say, Bishop, just thought I'd run this column by you just to see what you think. And, you know, if he sees something in there that he thinks is a little over the line, he might say, you know, could we try and rephrase this? Or can you talk to the writer and see if he'd be willing to make a change?
Could you give us an example?
I guess I'm thinking particularly on the whole issue of same-sex marriage.
Okay.
That's a pretty tough one in our diocese. There are, you know, Catholics who feel we need to show compassion to people of the same sex who are in a committed relationship, but the church teaches that while we would be compassionate towards those people, that we don't condone marriage between people of the same sex.
And the Pope and the bishop don't always agree on that, do they?
You know, the Pope takes a very pastoral approach.
Right.
Which I think is really refreshing in the church.
Yeah. You know, people would say, oh, censorship. Apparently, they've never been in a regular newspaper where you have pretty much the same kind of give and take and tug of war as to whether something is going to appear in print or not.
Oh, that's true, because I worked at the Quad City Times for 21 years, and, you know, there were times you had to, you know, I mean, there are advertisers to think about. There are all kinds of issues that are discussed about whether something is going to go into the paper or not go into the paper.
Yeah, I've heard it very cynically stated. A fellow told me once there was a reporter, I think it was in television, though, rather than the newspaper, outside doing a stand-up, and I kind of knew what he was going for, so I called the publisher and said, you know, there are so many tens of thousands of dollars of advertising we're scheduling for this month. Just wanted you to know that. And the story never made it. So, there are pressures. There are pressures from all sorts of sources.
That's right.
And you are not exempt from them in the religious press.
Right, secular or religious.
Well, you have a week to get it ready, though, instead of every day.
Well, I know when I left the Times, my coworkers from the Times teased me and said, oh my gosh, it's a piece of cake. You don't have a deadline once a week. And I said, hey, look, that week goes by really fast.
How much writing do you do?
I still do a ton of writing. In fact, before I came here today, I was at the Salvation Army Rehab Center. I interviewed a judge before that and a probation officer before that. We're working on a story about drug court. And so I still get a real thrill out of reporting, writing, and editing. But it occurred to me, I'm spending a lot of time on this particular story, and I have things to edit. I have a paper to market, you know, just all kinds of other things. So I end up spending probably more hours at my office than maybe some other people would.
I remember one two-week period when I was alone at that paper, and that was a harrowing time because I was working full-time at two other jobs. And dear me, it was late into the night, early in the morning, any time I could get, and trying to put the thing together. And right. That was it. I mean, there were no other writers.
You know, I remember I was working at the Quad City Times, and I was an assistant editor. And it was right before Christmas, and I wanted to have everything done before I went on the Christmas holiday with my family. So I came into work at 10 a.m. one morning, and I had all these deadlines to meet, and I was trying to get all this stuff done. And all of a sudden, I looked up from my desk, which there was nobody in the newsroom, and then all of a sudden, people were coming into the circulation office, and I realized it was the next morning. It was 4 o'clock in the morning, and the circulation staff was coming in. I got home. My husband was not a happy camper. Probably thought I had been killed in a car accident or something. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
But so it was a little bit overboard.
But are you a one-person editorial staff?
I have a staff of 6 people. One is a part-time. He's a webmaster for our diocese and for the Catholic Messenger. And then I have 2 other on the editorial staff, and I have a circulation manager and an advertising rep.
Boy, that's a huge staff.
I know, compared to what you had.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's at times they are changing.
When you have to edit something that somebody has written, do you go to them and work with them, or are you free to simply cut this because it's too long or because it's something that might be a little over the edge? Or
I love editing. It's what I like to do is if I get a story and I think it's a good story, maybe it's a diamond in the rough, and I love polishing it because nobody knows that it was polished. They just know that this is what appears in the paper. If there's something that I find questionable or I think that someone has made a statement about the church that just isn't simply true or that is, you know, misinformed, you know, I will definitely go back to the writer. And sometimes I'll reject a piece of work. I'll say, you know, particularly with letters to the editor, I'm pretty firm with that. Somebody will write something and I'll say, this, you need to change this. This is inaccurate. It's unfair. It's libelous, you know, whatever. And they either, you know, and I'll say to them, or if it needs to be cut, I'll say, our policy is 300 words or less for a letter to the editor. If they give me a 600-word letter, I'm going to say, I'll cut it or you cut it. And they generally will say, I'll do that. Uh-huh. They'd rather do it themselves. But sometimes I'll just do it and send it to them and say, this is what we've got. I don't mean to be superior about it or anything like that. It's just people know what the policy is, and we need to you know, be fair to everybody and
Well, that's what you have editors for.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing that bothers me is unedited material that goes through the internet, and you have no idea what you're dealing with. As a matter of fact, the vitriol, and you get these contending monologues on the internet. You think there's the death of thought right there because you're not listening to one another. You're not dealing with ideas. Back in the days when all the local newspapers used to print this, what was it called? Speak Out, or a couple of different titles.
Yeah.
And one was in there about something I had written, and it said libelous things. They were absolutely untrue and really terrible. I called the publisher and said, I just want you to know that you published that. And if you publish something like that again, I'll sue.
Good
you know,
for you.
Because you shouldn't do that. And that was the end of that. And then not long after that, that feature disappeared. And that is now on the internet where people can just rail any way they want. Do you get much reaction on the internet? Do people have access to you through the internet?
Yes, they do. We have a website. We have a print edition, an e-edition, and a website. And so people can make comments on our website. And I have, you know, the ability to reject a comment if it's, you know, if I don't like it. Mm-hmm. Or don't, I shouldn't say don't like it. But if it's not appropriate, or if it's, you know, slandering someone, I just, you know, will delete it, will yank it. And I don't have to give anyone a reason for that either.
Well, the thing is, if it's not as if it were printed in the paper.
Right.
If it's printed in the paper, that'll get you in trouble.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So it's I guess it's nice that you have the internet, which can act as a conduit or a sewer, depending on what's in it.
But it does seem on the internet that people are really a lot more vicious. And you think, I don't know if it's the anonymity of it or if just because you're not seeing a face, but I don't know, they're not even quite that bad in print.
You know, that starts in seventh grade.
Yeah,
or probably
it does.
Sixth grade. I mean, the kids on the internet can be just terribly vicious to each other.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, I don't know. It's, there's something about the anonymity of it, I guess. Well, I just don't understand why people will do that, but if your name's not, you know, if you're calling yourself the old Ray Fox or something, who knows who wrote that? But then after a while, who cares? But what is the future of religious newspapers?
That's a good question. I think just as with secular newspapers, we're all trying to figure out what the lay of the land is going to be. I think the future might be in the e-edition, you know, the electronic edition. You can get it on your tablet or on your smartphone. I think that's the way we're trying to reach out to readers, the younger readers, because the younger readers, you know, 30 and under, many of them are not reading a newspaper, which I think is really sad, but that's the case. So we're trying to reach out to them. What's kind of interesting, we just started something at Assumption High School in Davenport where we have all the students have received an e-edition, so they can access their e-edition. And so we're thinking they can use that e-edition as resource material for classes. You know, if they need to do, you know, a paper in sociology on a subject, you know, often, you know, we're covering world events in our paper, so they can use our paper as a resource.
Well, do you see the complete demise of a print version eventually, or... I would hate to think that is happening to numbers of church papers.
I know, and I don't know. I think that there's still, it's a niche publication. For instance, I know there's a national Catholic newspaper that has a more conservative bent that's doing very well. And
that's,
I don't know if it's just
Der Wanderer.
No, that one. I don't know about that one for sure. But there's another one that there's another publication, not The Wanderer, but another one that seems to be doing really well. It's connected to the EWTN TV station, and so I think there's some synergy there.
Yeah, I know what we hear about is the National Catholic Reporter out of Kansas City.
Right.
That is a smashing paper.
Right, and that's the liberal newspaper, but it does well, but I don't know if it does as well as this other publication, but...
It's interesting how church membership is split right down the middle anymore.
Right.
And that does not bode well. If two sides don't talk to each other, in any situation.
Well, I think it is true. I'm not sure if it's true among the Catholics, but in the Protestant denominations, there probably is more difference within denominations between conservative and liberal than between a Presbyterian and a Lutheran and a Baptist.
I would agree with you on that. In fact, I was at, this was about 5 or 6 years ago. I'm not going to name where this happened, but in a particular city in our diocese, there was a petition, a very crude petition that went out, and it said that they could not have their children read the Catholic Messenger because it would be like feeding rat poison to your children.
Oh.
And it was just unbelievable. I thought, wow.
You, Barbara, purveyor of rat poison.
And so then I went to visit this particular group, and it was interesting. They all gathered around me, and they're asking me questions. We had a columnist, Father Richard McBrien, who was very, well, he's had a liberal point of view, and he would kind of skewer it, you know what I mean? He would make a point, but he'd make sure to zing the conservatives, and I thought, oh, boy, I'm going to hear from people, and I did. But this one particular group of Catholics were just livid that I would run something like that. So we try to be, to balance it. We try to make sure that we've got a variety of viewpoints in the paper. And so I figure if people are mad at us on either end of the spectrum, then we're doing pretty good.
Yeah, it's that's one of those tough things, where people don't talk to each other. Will not listen. I love divergent points of view. I'm close to people who don't agree with anything I think, and I think that's wonderful.
Right.
That's the only way, because Bert Metcalf and I used to do a radio show. He was considered very conservative. I was considered quite liberal, and he changed my mind on a number of things, and I changed his mind on a number of things. The rational discourse can do that. If you listen to the other person and think deeply about what you're doing and what you're thinking, that's when there's some creativity in your thinking process. That's the way the world ought to be.
I agree, and I like that. I think people need to be more diplomatic in their language. We'll get letters or editorials, and I think you're shouting at your public. You're using language that's incendiary to begin with. If you're trying to change someone's point of view, how do you think you're going to change your point of view by being that way?
Yeah.
If you approach it in a more diplomatic way, it's words you can use. You can just certain words are going to send people out of orbit, but other words, they have a more soothing sort of tone to them. I just think it's just choosing your words sometimes.
Spoken like a true editor. Barbara Arlen-Fey is editor of the Davenport Catholic Messenger, and she's been our guest today. Thank you very much, Barb.
Thank you.
Good to see you again. And now, let's see what Garrison Keillor has in store for us on the Writer's Almanac.